This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and this show is called The People Behind the PhDs. This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and welcome to part three of the interview with Peter Leiterman Long, who researches women in politics, Twitter activism, political communication, and diversity and inclusion in public relations at the SI Newhouse School of Communication at Syracuse University in New York, New York. There's an overlap of about 10 seconds, so we can pick up right where we left off in The People Behind the PhDs. Is that why you do
that? It does help with memory retention. I think writing down things, especially for me, helps with memory retention. I write on everything.
Okay.
I have way too much paper in my office. I kill a lot of trees. I write on everything. And I print out a lot of things too. I'm trying to make the transition to digital. It's really hard because I get migraines and staring at a screen too long does not help. I've been trying to transition to digital as best as possible, but I print everything out and I don't just highlight. I know some people like they use multiple color highlights. I use a pencil and I make, if I had a thought about something, if I rewrite what I understand and I follow the leads of the discussion.
Okay, so why communications? I mean, you said you decided to give up math and those.
I was recommended, My advisor said, basically heard my story, asked me about my, you know, what it is that I do, and looked at my history and decided that I should play on my strengths and put me in multimedia because I was a computer person. I did graphic design. I did presentations all the time. I was able to do all these things, and multimedia was like up and coming. You know, this is before the birth of Web 2.0.
Okay.
So it was a roughly pretty young discipline, and so he put me in that program that he oversaw as well, and so I lucked out there.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay, now the marriage makes sense because communications traditionally is thought as, you know, writing, let's say, in a basic format, but obviously modern communications is all these multimedia components, and your mathematical mind can help. Okay, that makes sense.
Oh yeah, no, I struggled with that end. Like, I still had to take my journalism classes. I still had to take all these other classes with all these other students. And then I excelled really well in my production classes, struggled to hell with all the writing.
Okay.
And I remember I was taking media law and ethics, and taking media law and ethics, and my professor decided to fail me on a paper, and I couldn't understand why, and it baffles me. It baffled me, and I had to go and see him because he failed me on a paper, and he's like, "You didn't write this. This is plagiarism." And I was like, "No, I wrote this." And I went back and I brought in my three drafts. And I'm like, I sat right here in your class when you went back over this assignment last class and made edits based on what you said in class.
Oh, wow. And he thought you had plagiarized him.
He just thought that the writing was too well. And this was the first time somebody had told me that I was a good writer.
Right? A writer. Yes. I'm a writer. I can write.
Right.
Huh.
Even though I struggle with writing, right? It was very, very baffling altogether. Because I was working so hard to do better in school.
Wow. Well, and your underlying dyslexia too, right? That's always something you're working through.
Yeah. I didn't do well in terms of my journalistic writing, but my essay writing was really good. And my professor just thought that I could not have written this work because it was too good for the person he knew me to be. And I'm like, nope, I did this. I have all the drafts to prove it. But it was the first time someone had told me that I wrote well.
Wow. So you eventually obviously graduated your bachelor's degree and you did well. What, at that point, were you ready to do a PhD immediately at the end of your bachelor's, or what were you kind of thinking academically at that point?
Actually, so I was thinking I was going to be, I was working to be an all-around communication consultant, because as much as I liked production, I didn't want to be just in production. I wanted to be a more overall communication person, because my brain thinks in perspective as well as details, right? Because of that, I worked to get my I got a certificate in advertising management, a certificate in public relations, as well as my degree in communication, which specializes in multimedia, so that I could be an overall communication consultant.
So what happened? Why didn't you do that?
Economic boom, all the jobs dried up. Everyone kept telling me they couldn't afford me. And I actually had 3 job offers going into graduation. And I was told, the thing is, we can't afford to pay for you anymore because the economy has taken a turn for the worse.
So this is as you're graduating from your bachelor's degree at the University of West Indies in Kingston.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So the housing boom of 2008 actually is when it happened.
Okay.
And luckily, I had applied to grad school. I had applied to grad school in philosophy with a bunch of my friends who were also philosophy majors. And we were like, we should just apply. It doesn't cost us anything. It's a backup plan. So I applied for a master's in philosophy. And after not getting a job and spending all summer worrying about what I was going to do, I had gotten into the program in philosophy and actually requested that they change it because I was eligible for a PhD program because I had an upper class honors degree, and that qualified me for a PhD program.
So this is which university you're accepted to?
University of West Indies. I applied.
That's the same university. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was like, this will be the next logical step in the progression. You know, a master's degree, no big deal. I wasn't really thinking too hard about it. And it was either that or stay home and twiddle my thumb. my philosophy professor says, well, you should just do the PhD program because it will get you out of here faster. And I made a request for my consideration for the PhD instead of the master's, and I literally went from my bachelor's to a PhD program.
Okay, so that's a jump that some people do, but it's fairly rare. Most people do some sort of intermediary time.
It's also very rare in the U.S. education system, but it's more common in the U.K. model.
Okay.
Thanks
for that distinction. Yes.
Because you can get, essentially, it's set up to be in tandem with the Masters of Philosophy program, and it's more of a research degree than it is a master's degree in general.
I see.
If I went to Germany, for example, I would have graduated with a master's instead of a bachelor's, because many of their programs are 5-year master's program as opposed to a bachelor's program.
Ah, I got it. So eventually, though, you didn't finish your PhD, obviously, at the University of West Indies. How did you get from Jamaica, a beautiful island with very nice weather, to a place called Syracuse, New York, which is probably not known for the nicest weather all of the time. This People Behind the PhDs episode is sponsored by Harp Concepts. Are you an up-and-coming artist with a bright idea? Are you a startup company who needs to prove your concept? Or are you a person who likes to personalize special gifts? Harp Concepts makes high-quality 3D models for a fraction of the price of big-name companies. Learn more at harpconcepts.com. That's harpconcepts.com.
Which I did not know until after I applied, right? So I was working on my proposal for my PhD, but I was teaching also because I had, you know, I've been in the program long enough. I've accrued this knowledge base, and I have been a tutor for a while in the program, and there were short faculty members, and so I ended up being offered a position of a lecturer as part of my assistantship, and so I ended up having I have a lot of teaching experience because I've been teaching for forever. I was teaching philosophy and not getting my work done. And decided that I really wanted to graduate. There was no way I was going to get a good contract teaching philosophy unless I actually had my PhD. And so I spent a year trying to figure out how to get my PhD, how to get my dissertation out, because we didn't have much guidance. Most of the persons who were in the program taught me when I was in undergrad, and then they were my colleagues, and they weren't graduating either.
Oh, okay.
And so we had a fundamental problem graduating and matriculating people out of the PhD program. I started traveling and presenting work as a way to give myself some incremental milestones in my dissertation process. So I came up with a plan. Went out, met new people in the philosophy discipline. I traveled. I went to the University of Oregon at the Summer Institute for American Philosophy. I went to the Cato campus for their symposium on philosophy, and I met a whole bunch of different people and used the connections I had created to try to figure out what I needed to do. The program itself was coming up for its five-year review in the strategic planning, and Charles Mills was a great mentor of mine, was one of the persons I had talked to before he came to UWI to do that review process. And I recommended that they close the program because they didn't have the faculty to matriculate students. We had more PhD students on faculty than we had faculty to to create committees to graduate PhD students. And so I was like, well, this program is not going where I need it to go, so I need to figure out what's the next best thing. And so I was like, I need to get my master's. And I applied to several universities. The University of Syracuse University is the only U.S. university I applied to. The others were in the U.K. But Syracuse was the only one that was offering funding. So I was like, Syracuse it is. And I went to Syracuse.
Had you been to Syracuse before?
Never. Okay. Been to Syracuse before. I had never been to Syracuse before. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I applied for my master's in Pan-African studies because it was the only area that was close enough to philosophy and the work that I was doing at the time. I was looking at Caribbean philosophy as a branch of philosophy. I was trying to make a case for it, and I was using American philosophy as a model for that.
And so you were accepted into Syracuse University for a master's program. Is this in the Newhouse School?
No, it was in the Pan-African Studies program.
Okay, Pan-African Studies program. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I spent 2 years getting my master's in Pan-African Studies at Syracuse. And while I was there, that's another story altogether. While I was there, I got involved again with communication and politics, and I was recommended to apply. Originally, I was being told to apply for the program in public diplomacy, which would have given me 2 more masters, but I couldn't afford it. Instead, the director of the public diplomacy program said that I should apply for the PhD program and then focus in public diplomacy, and that's what I did.
So you applied for the PhD program in the... Okay.
Their PhD in communications at Newhouse.
Okay, so the Newhouse School, if anyone doesn't know, at Syracuse University is probably, if not the best, one of the absolute best communication programs in the world. I mean, just a couple of their alumni is a woman named Pamela Chin, who's head of creative at the communication studio for Instagram. It's this little small company people might have heard of, Instagram. Bob Costa, he's a sportscaster for multiple Olympic Games. He's a Syracuse alumnus. Mike Tirico, a play-by-play commentator, very good if you like hockey. He's very good at hockey, among other sports. And a person named Lakshmi Singh from NPR. She has one of the best silky voices. So, and then soon to be Pete Long will be a graduate of this incredible school, the Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University. So that's where you were accepted to do your PhD, at the Newhouse School.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. And then you had done this Pan-African studies, but you started getting back to in communications again, and this is why you were accepted there?
So the master's program does look for, a variety of different students, right? But you have to have a decisive goal as to what you wanted to do. And even though I was in Pan-African studies, my research coming out of that was looking at political communications. So my master's thesis looks at the political communications of the former Prime Minister of Jamaica, Michael Manley, during the 1970s as a rally call, how he created a philosophy of what it meant to be... I don't want to use the word Pan-African so much as a Jamaican, create this Jamaican identity and rally support for his very radical democratic socialists position as a country. So he garnered support in his 8 years in office, even though he had mounting pressures from outside, like the U.S., because we're talking about socialism here at this point, right? And so my dissertation, my thesis focused on looking at, the political communication aspect of it, what it meant, how it impacted people, and how we could read into that. And that was really fascinating to me. And so I really wanted to do more political communication work.
Okay, so this, you're talking about Jamaican history, long after independence, but it was still within the Commonwealth of Nations.
It's not even that long after independence. Jamaica got independent in the
60s? 1962, yeah.
So it's 10 years after.
Okay, so it's 10 years after this new prime minister is really trying to craft an identity for Jamaica that's separate and distinct. Is that
mm-hmm.
okay?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of era that you were studying.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you. And what was the name of the prime minister again?
Michael Manley.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is what you were starting to do. You're doing your master's degree, and this is what catapulted you into the PhD program.
Yeah, I wanted to do. I wanted to focus on political communications, which is why I was interested in public diplomacy. And doctoral dissertation to be on how it is that the U.S. system of politics through their debates, for example, and their campaigning, how that campaigning style impacts Jamaica's campaigning style, which is a completely different, which has a completely different democratic model, political model, right? It's a parliamentary system. Mm-hmm. The U.S. is a presidential system. So it makes no sense for the campaigning model of the U.S. to be applied to that of Jamaica. But it does have this impact on what happens and how the election cycle operates. And so that was going to be my dissertation. That's what I applied with. I was like, this is what I'm going to do for my... It's a short program. Technically, you're supposed to be done with this in 3 years, but it's a very short doctoral program. It's not a five-year program like in other universities. So you had to come in with a master's. You had to come in knowing what you wanted to do.
Sure.
And that's what I wanted to do. That was going to be my next research project, research project.
So this sounds like, you know, the famous last words of many... Many a person who embarked on a PhD doctorate career, this is what I'm going to do.
I know.
Only to run into, you know, various things, reality, a change of heart. What launched you in a different direction then?
Well, first, the Prime Minister of Jamaica decided to call elections earlier than I anticipated. So there went up my cause and effect model altogether.
And he didn't consult with you ahead of time, apparently.
No, I know, right? She did not consult with me before making this decision. She said God told her to call elections, so she called elections, and then she lost it. And so that went out the door. But I was still working on my, you know, getting to ABD status. So I still had to take my quals, still had to do all these other things in 2015, 2016. And then 2016 came around, so working on the stuff. But I didn't want to miss out on the elections. So I did start data collection with my professor, and we've been working on some projects for the 2016 elections, which I'm excited about, and which have become fundamental to my overall dissertation. So currently my dissertation focuses on the effects of the 2016 elections on voters, specifically looking at the debates, what effect does debate have, and the emotional impact of watching and viewing and engaging in that election cycle have on voters.
Okay, so what you mentioned there is you had to do your qualifications. For people who don't know, qualifications are sometimes they're called comprehensive exams, or exams you have to take about the midway point of your PhDs to advance you to the next level, to advance you to candidacy. That's kind of what it is. Okay, so you're still working within the Jamaican space, but if I'm looking, going back to the early part of our conversation, some of your research has to do with women in TV and politics, public relations, diversity, and inclusion. Can you talk about those two things in particular, women in TV and politics, and what your research has uncovered or what angle you've taken in that space?
Sure. So before the 2016 elections, we all had this thought that Hillary was going to run again, and I was taking a qual methods class, rather, and I had to come up with some methods paper. This was also the time around the time where everyone was like all Shonda Rhimes, everything basically. You know, you watch Scandal, you watch How to Get Away with Murder. You had all these prominent depictions of prominent women in politics on television. And so I found that interesting in terms of how pop culture tends to pave the way for cultural acceptance of change. And I wanted to investigate that, so we use that as a catalyst to talk about women in politics. How do we, if we can accept women who conflict with our definition of female stereotypes in their pursuit for an engagement with politics, will be just as supportive of women in politics in real life. So,
what did you find?
It was very, very minuscule. in that women, you know, the acceptance of women portrayed on television did transpire to the acceptance of women in politics today. And that it does exist. Like the fact that we are okay with, like, what's her name again?
You mean Hillary Clinton? Huh?
No. The scandal lady.
In U.S. American politics?
No, on TV. Oh. Olivia Pope.
Oh, okay. Got it. Oh, yeah, of course. Got it.
Olivia Pope, right? We
on
like,
ABC.
You know, yeah. We subscribe to and support people like Olivia Pope, characters like Olivia Pope. Can we not also support women like Hillary Clinton? Fundamentally, it does transpire, but it's also complicated by the fact that people still vote against along party lines, right? People still feel that it's not just about gender. People do feel that it's not about gender. So while there is acceptance, there may not necessarily be a straight out subscription to vote. There is no direct correlation between supporters for someone like Hillary Clinton and viewers of, like, Scandal.
So pop culture can pave the way, but it can't open the gate.
It can open the gate for cultural change, but it doesn't necessitate that change.
I got it. So, Peter, one more question before we finish up. So what I'm being really drawn to in the conversation is your multi-layered journey. I mean, obviously, you started in Jamaica, and then you've now transferred to the United States. But, you know, the journey about just doing education is hard for just the average sort of person, whoever that average person is. Some of your dyslexia, some of your learning things, anxiety, and then all of the advocacy you've had to do for yourself within the education environment. So if someone were thinking about doing a PhD at some point of their lives, or even just a master's degree, which is plenty hard, and they know that they have some things that are more challenging than the average person, again, whatever the average person is, but they know it's difficult for them, what would you tell them? Because you probably have a lot of advice to give to students or maybe someone listening to this podcast who really loves to learn, but maybe they identify with you and say, gosh, you know, I struggle in the same way this incredible person does. What would you share? What would you share with them?
Imposter syndrome is just that, a facade. You're not beholden to it, you know. We get down and we get stressed out about the things that we're about to take on, but we should make that decision and strive for it. You know, when I got to Syracuse for my Pan-African degree, master's in Pan-African studies, I almost didn't come back. Like, I left that summer, my first semester, and I did not want to return back to the United States to do this program. And this is where the health and fear of my mother came in. My mother was just not allowing me to stay. She was like, you have a plane, you have to go back to school. She was not happy when things were not folding out to me leaving, actually. And so I sat in that airport and I had to remind myself that I applied and they accepted me. And I've been doing this for a while. I've been in a PhD program before. And I had to, like, reaffirm my knowledge of who I am and what I wanted, why I was doing what I was doing. I want to do this program because I want to get my PhD so I can go back and be a professor, because I am now on this track and I'm committed to doing this. I like what I do. I like motivating students. I like doing research. and I, I've had people tell me I'm good at it, and I have people who motivate me and have mentored me and believe in me. So I must be doing something right.
Sure.
So I need to take back ownership and my agency and work at it. And so I, making that decision. You know, there are all these other things that go into play, like the finances, how you're going to make it happen. But having an acknowledgement, a mantra, I guess, of this is who I am, this is what I'm doing, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, is fundamental. Understanding why you're making this decision, understanding why you're taking this opportunity, why you're taking that chance. Not just because it's like the next phase or everyone has it, but based on your own milestones and your goals. Not using other people as a measuring stick for your own life, I think is fundamental. Wow. And that's what has gotten me through every bout of imposter syndrome and anxiety and stress that I go through on a daily basis. I literally, every time I stand in the position I stand in, I teach or work on research, submit something for publication or submit something for presentation, I am literally challenging all the things that tell me that I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing.
Thanks for listening to part 3 of the interview with Peter Leiderman Long, who researches women in politics at the S.I. Newhouse School of Communication at Syracuse University in Syracuse, New York. To continue listening, visit drz.net. That's dr-z.net. You can also follow me on Facebook at DRZ Podcasts and find me on iTunes. As always, happy deciding. People Behind the PhDs is conceived, written, produced, and edited by Dr. Z, that's me, Zachary Brooks, PhD, in Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts. Learn more at drz.net/about. That's dr-z.net/about.